I want to call our special budget approval meeting to order for June 26. It's a few minutes after 9 o'clock. Welcome to the Board of Regents. Some of the regents are in person at Van Meter Auditorium, and some of the regents are joining us via Zoom. So, good morning, everyone. Hope your summer is going well. Thank you for your attendance today. We'll call on Secretary Brinkley to call the roll.
Regent Bale.
Present.
Regent Ball.
Present.
Secretary Brinkley is present. Regent Ernst.
Present.
Regent Harris.
Present.
Chair Higdon.
Present.
Regent Henson.
Present.
Vice Chair McKinney.
Present.
Regent Nichols.
Present.
Regent Porter.
I know, David, Mr. Porter is here. He stepped out momentarily, but he has been here, so hopefully he'll be joining us momentarily.
Okay. Then I will say, Mr. Chair, we have 10 regents present representing the quorum of the board.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Now that we have a quorum, we're ready to conduct business. We'll turn, deviate from the agenda just a little bit. We'll move to approval of our minutes. We have minutes for March 6th, 2020. Second quarterly meeting minutes from May 15, 2020. And our special called meeting minutes of May 27th, 2020. Do I hear any additions or corrections to any of those specified three sets of minutes? Hearing none, I will entertain a motion to either accept all three with one motion, or we can do individual based on the pleasure of the movement.
Mr. Chairman, I move we accept all of the minutes as presented.
Second.
We have a motion by Dr. Bell, second by Regent Harris for approval. Any further discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. We have approval. Mr. Brinkley, I may have gotten into your lane of travel just a little bit there, but we're good.
I believe we're going to do that differently today, just because I'm at a remote location. I think Julia is going to call the votes, or you can call. We can do it however you want.
No, we'll just make it work. But thank you. Going back to the agenda, we have a segment that we would like to make a special recognition today, and that recognition is for Regent Porter. Regent Porter, term ends June 30th or later, depending upon the actions of the governor. But we wanted to take this opportunity to do a couple of things. Number one, recognize him for 12 years of outstanding service to the university. During that time, he served on most of the committees. He served as chair of this Board of Regents. He's been all in, truly loves Western, and as a former student, has been a real, real insightful asset to this board. So, David, on behalf of all of us, I want to extend to you our appreciation. Want to extend to you recognition of 12 outstanding years of service. Want to extend to you an invitation to not be a stranger. Come and see us often. And with that, we would like to present to you a token of your service. And this is kind of awkward putting the mask back on and moving, but we'll try it. As a token of your service on this board of regents, we would like to present to you our customary gift of recognition. So thank you. Any other region that would like to add comment, or President Caboni, would you?
Chair Higdon, thank you for the opportunity. David, 12 years of one's life is a great deal to invest. I have to thank you, but perhaps as importantly, I have to thank your lovely wife, Beth. She has been as strong of a supporter of the university as you have been, and as is the case with my wife, is more pleasant and more likable, I think. We're really happy for you and for her, and thankful. I will never forget, always remember, my first basketball game, which came the evening after I was named 10th president at WKU. And you and I sat next to each other at that game and had just some terrific conversations about your experience as a student here. And that shaped both my remembrance, but my perception of how WKU had changed over time, but in many ways stayed exactly the same. And one of the reasons we maintain that core mission and connection to it is that we have folks like you who remember what we do in people's lives and invest and serve the university. So with that, thank you for your good counsel, your friendship, your graceful leadership, and for the time that you've invested.
Certainly, serving on a board like this, really one of the greatest things is the relationships that you form and the people you meet. And David and Beth have certainly enriched my time on the board. David was chair soon after I came on the board, and he's a quiet, steadying influence in any realm he is finding himself in, and we will miss him greatly, and Beth.
Thank you. Thank you again, David. Thank you, Beth. Best wishes. It's now appropriate to move into our finance and budget portion of the special called meeting. Finance Chair McKinney.
I believe that the first thing we have is a presentation by Susan before we vote on the two action items. So, Susan, go ahead.
Sure. Thanks, Jason. So, okay, thank you. Before I get started in the presentation, I just want to take the opportunity to thank several people. So, first off, I have to thank President Caboni for his leadership through my first budget. Secondly, thank you to Cheryl Stevens and her leadership over the academic. And also, I want to take the opportunity to really thank Rebecca Russell. She's our interim AVP for budget. She has just done a tremendous job, and I just want to turn it over to Becca for a second so she can introduce herself to the board and maybe just give a brief background of her time here at Westwood. So, Becca.
Good morning, everyone. It's really good to see you all, some in person and some by Zoom. As Susan said, my name is Rebecca Russell. This will be my 12th year here at WKU. I started with the Honors College when I came back to WKU to work full-time, and then worked for IT about 4 years ago. And then when Susan joined us this past summer, she asked me to come up and join her team to work on budget for the Division of Strategy, Operations, and Finance. And then I was given the opportunity to come into the budget director role, now the AVP for budget, in October of last year. So I'm excited about the opportunity to work with campus as a whole in this new role, to have survived through the first budget season together with Susan. And I also would like to thank her for her leadership through this process, and excited to show you all what we've worked on this whole year.
Thank you, Becca. And Jason, if it's okay with you, I'd like to keep this as informal as we can to allow people to ask questions as we move through, rather than waiting till the end and going through questions. Is that okay, Jason, with you? If we
absolutely.
Okay, great. So next slide. So this is just an outline of what I plan to cover this morning. So it's just a quick outline of the budget development process, a high-level budget summary, some highlights of our revenue budget, expenditure budget highlights. I think what's really important about this budget is going once again through our budget balancing strategies, a little bit about our capital budget, and next steps going forward. So next slide. So, and then the next slide. So just a reminder, we went over this, I believe, when we were talking about how we were going to deal with this budget, but I think it was important to go through it once again to show the Regents and campus, as a lot of people are joining us via YouTube, the collaborative budget process that President Caboni has put in place. So you'll see that we have support unit leadership, primary unit leadership, those are your academic units, providing input into an operating allocation committee and the budget executive committee, and then back and forth with our campus constituencies, the faculty senate, the staff senate, and the student government association. And then the budget executive committee makes recommendations to campus leadership, and then we share and get feedback from the Board of Regents. So, again, a very collaborative, transparent budget process, which I think sometimes transparency is great. Sometimes, the more people know, the more they want to talk. But this is exactly what campus needs, is a very transparent budget development process. So next slide. So, again, just a reminder of our timeline for the budget development process this year. Again, a very unique year. I think we're all very well aware of that. But kind of going back, so in September, working with Provost Stevens, we appointed the budget governance committees, and they were established and started meeting then. In the October through December timeframe is when we started again, our meetings with the governance committees and budget hearings began with our support and academic units. Then in the January-February timeframe, that's when the primary academic units requested submissions and discussions through Provost Stevens, February through March. March, again, that was pre-COVID, and that's when we were doing our original revenue and expense forecasting. And tuition and fee settings discussions began. So I think we all know that the world changed ever so much in March, and that's when the campus had to respond to the pandemic. As I said several months ago, I was really proud of the work the campus did with the BEC. We had to pivot very quickly. We began meeting with the BEC to have emergency meetings to revise budget projections. And those recommendations from the BEC were sent to campus leadership. In early May, with this body, we presented the BEC budget recommendations and with the various campus governance groups. Finally, in May and early June, we began active monitoring of enrollment, revenue, and expense forecasts to make sure that we thought we were still on target with our budget revisions. And then today, as you know, we're here to present the final budget recommendation to our board. So next slide, please. Just a reminder, again, I think this is really, really important, what our governance committees look like. So we have an operating allocation committee that's chaired by our co-chaired by our bursar and our interim CFO. And you'll see the amount of people that are involved. We have deans. We have faculty senate representation. We have VPs, staff senate. And then next slide. Going to our capital allocation committee that's chaired by Brian Russell, our chief facilities officer. And again, you'll see the representation. We have deans. We have faculty senate, staff senate, VPs, so on. So finally, looking at the composition, next slide, please, of our budget executive committee. So Provost Stevens and myself co-chair that committee. And again, you'll see that we have deans, Julie Shadowin, chair of the faculty senate, VPs, we have student government representatives. So I think that we can say that campus has been well representative through these committee structures throughout the budget process. So next slide. Now, just to kind of go into the budget itself, first off, let's go to the next slide. So this is what the proposed budget looks like that we're presenting to the Regents today. So a total budget of $353.2 million, which is a decline of 9% for $34.5 million. That's a pretty significant decline and not one that we would typically see. But again, we're working in very unique circumstances with all the uncertainties around enrollment and state appropriation. Next slide. Again, that's what this looks like graphically. And if you can have one more click, please. So again, this is our total budget, $353.2 million, percent change of about 9%. Next slide. Okay, moving into the revenue highlights. This is what it looks like. So tuition and fees, $166 million for state appropriations. We're factoring in that 10% decrease in state appropriations of about $7.3 million. Our restricted funds, grants, and contracts, $15.4 million. Student financial aid, restricted student financial aid of $42.9 million. Self-generated funds, $27.5 million. Carry forward funds of 19.2 and our auxiliary enterprises about 16 million. So next slide. So again, this shows you that overall our tuition and fees and state appropriations make up about 66% of this budget. Next slide. This is what that looks like graphically. So once again, you can see the dark gray and the red, the tuition and fees and state appropriations, is the they're the primary components of our budget. Next slide. So just a little bit on tuition and fees. So as I said, prior to COVID-19, as a campus, we were poised to navigate through a modest decline in tuition and fees. And that was primarily due to a smaller class sizes working through the enrollment pipeline. However, once COVID, the pandemic hit, we had to be conservative and factor in an additional 5% reduction in tuition revenue. With that 5% reduction in tuition revenue, we're also anticipating a 5% decline in fee revenue. Now, I guess that's the bad news. The good news is, and this is great news for campus, I don't think there's many institutions in the country that can say this. All of our current yield indicators for the first-time freshman class continue to remain strong. WKU is on track to welcome the largest increase to our freshman class in 18 years. Currently, our freshman class appears to be up over 300 students, which is just incredible. So a huge, huge thank you and shout-out to Brian Kuster and Ethan and their respective staffs. They've done a lot of good work. And then also the good news is while we have built in that 5% decline in tuition revenue, right now overall enrollments are holding pretty steady, which is great news. Now, I think we all know that we won't know for sure what our enrollment looks like until the students are back in August. But right now all indicators are strong. Next slide. So just a bit more on tuition and fees. So the Council on Post-Secondary Education set a one-year tuition parameter to align with the state budget being a one-year budget. They also did not set any high-level parameters that they typically do. They wanted to give institutions as much flexibility as possible this year, given the situation that we all face. Good news for our students, as we talked about at a specially called meeting. The decision has been to keep all of our tuition rates unchanged over prior years. So we felt it was important to support our students and families and not pass any of this burden onto them in the form of increased tuition. We also are suspending distance learning surcharge and fees for the next fiscal year, recognizing that many of our students will be forced into some online courses as we work through the pandemic. So we wanted to make sure that they were not punished in any way for moving to online courses. Next slide. A little on our state appropriation. Again, I've shown that anticipated reduction there below the line, but you'll see our general operating declined about $600,000. There was some additional money put in for the Gatton Academy, about $237,000, and the Connecting Mesonet remains the same at $750,000. Okay. So I think this is a really telling slide. Basically what our students have had to deal with as the state has continued to cut our general fund appropriations. So you'll see back in 98-99, our FTE support from the state was at 8,257 for every per FTE student. That now has declined to about 4,600. And you can see basically the change in FTE students as well from 98-99 enrollment of around 12,000 to in 18-19 of about 14,800. So next slide. So looking at our auxiliaries, the largest change that you'll see in our auxiliary budget is around the transition of our WKU store to the Barnes and Noble management. That has caused our auxiliary budget to go down on the expenditure side by $7 million and on the revenue side by $7 million. So really no bottom line change as far as adding to our deficit. It was just simply the outsourcing. We've removed that item from our budget. Next slide. As far as self-generating units, they're anticipated to decline about $2 million. Most of this decline is directly related to canceled events, decreased rentals, less athletic revenue projected, all basically around the pandemic. And just as a note to our regents, any revenue-dependent unit that experiences revenue declines will be expected to decrease expenditures accordingly. So as I was meeting with David and Klaus earlier this week, you know, it's and David and Klaus and I had a good conversation around this. Since we're not really sure in many ways what we're going to be dealing with next year, some of the units have projected declines, others have not. But as we move through the year, and if revenue does decline, again, the expenditures will need to be declined as well. Okay, next slide. Moving into the expenditure highlights. So this is how our budget breaks out by the various divisions. So academic affairs, and I've actually done this from highest to lowest. I'm going to apologize because I can't see my whole screen, but academic affairs is our largest unit on campus, around $150 million, and then you'll see how that breaks out on down to our smallest unit being the presidential area. Next slide. Again, this is just our expenditure budget broken down by major classification in millions of dollars. So you'll see that we are a workforce-heavy institution, as is most institutions in higher education, makes up about close to 50% of our budget. On down, operating expenses about 15%, utilities 2%. I got to say, a great job by Brian Russell and his staff on maintaining our utilities at $7 million. For a campus this size with this type of footprint, that's a very, very reasonable utility budget. capital outlay, 1%, student financial assistance, 28%, close to $100 million, and debt service of about $17.1 million, or 5% of our budget. Next slide. Again, that's just what it looks like graphically. So as I've talked about, you can see where the personnel, your salaries and fringe benefits make up a large piece of the total pie. Next slide. So just some highlights. Most of our fiscal year 21 expenditures are down in most major categories with the exception of student financial assistance, and that's increasing by about $4.9 million, which is directly due to our new scholarship model. Again, academic affairs is our largest division on campus at $150 million, or approximately 42% of the budget. University-wide expenditures include typical bond payments, your debt service, institutional-based, basically non-financial federal aid scholarships, and additional funding for potential increases to the Kentucky retirement system. Next slide. And this is what our expenditures look like graphically across the various divisions. Next slide. The BEC, as I said, that's a critical committee to our process, and all the requests for fixed cost and supplemental increase come into that committee. Basically, they recommended 2 fixed cost increases to campus leadership. That was for faculty promotions, $361,000, and a small increase in our employer health insurance of $55,000, which basically keeps our health insurance at the same level for our employees. Next slide. So a reminder around our budget balancing strategies. Next slide. So again, what led to the 21 shortfall? The smaller classes working through the enrollment pipeline that we talked about. Declining state appropriations. That will be a mid-year adjustment, which we will probably learn about in December. Typically, they always give you a nice holiday present before leaving for holiday break, where the consensus forecasting group will come back into session. And if revenues are below a specific threshold, the governor is required by state mandate to make a budget revision. So, again, I think looking at what the state receipts are looking like to date, I think a 10% is prudent at this point. And then, as we talked about, the impacts to tuition of the pandemic. How will we address it? So we're addressing it as shared sacrifices across campus through salary reductions, a travel-free, and a travel freeze, and a hiring pause. The remainder will be through divisional expenditure reduction targets. Next slide. So the budget deficit of $27 million is going to be addressed through the recommendations from the Budget Executive Committee. As a reminder, we talked about this several months ago. That recommendation from the BEC is a two-pronged approach. Centrally managed reductions in addition to divisionally managed reductions. So the next slide will detail that. So as a reminder, we're budgeting at the central level $2 million for the hiring pause, travel reductions of $6 million. Now, as a reminder, we will have a few exceptions to travel. We like to call those strategic travel opportunities for Amanda and her fundraising staff around fundraising, and also Ethan and his admission staff for recruiting students to our campus. Performance improvements, this is some work that we've done around savings across campus. We've identified anywhere between 16 to 18 million, so we thought that it was conservative to apply about 2.5 to this budget. The tiered salary reductions of about $2.4 million. We are applying an additional $6 million in carry forward and then the division managed reductions will be around $8.3 million. The provost has worked with the academic units to set those for the academic deans, and the president and I set for the administration side of the university. So next slide. So, and I know that Jason will get to this in a moment, but the tiered salary reductions of $2.4 million will require board action to approve those. Next slide. And this just gives you a flavor of what the reduction targets by unit looks like. So total for the academic side is about $5.5 million. Total for the administrative side, about $2.8 million. And that was done based on the split. The $8.3 million was split based on a percent of budget. Okay, next slide.
Susan, can you go back? I have a question to the prior slide.
Uh-huh.
When we did reduction targets for FY20, the divisions were told that they can use one-time money and then for the next budget year this would become permanent. How are we dealing with these reduction targets? Are they going to be one-time money and then permanent, or is this just a one-time money thing?
So, Klaus, that's a good question. I believe it was Klaus. Sometimes it's hard to tell on these Zoom meetings. But some units were able to meet their fiscal year 20 reduction target using permanent funds. For example, in my division of strategy operations and finance, I was able to meet most of the reduction target with permanent strategies. But whatever units did not meet the current year, fiscal year 20 reduction target, either through one time or just not able to make all of it permanent, the remainder of that reduction target will move into next fiscal year. So it will be, these will be over and above that target.
Oh, that does not address the question. The question was about these reduction targets for FY21. They can be achieved with one-time money for FY21, but are they supposed to be permanent for the next budget year? That's the question.
Well, I think, Klaus, again, there's some uncertainty around this because we just don't know exactly if all of these dollars will necessarily be permanent or if it's going to be a one-time because of COVID. 19. So I think what we'll have to do is working with the provost, we'll have to monitor these and see how our projections are aligning with reality. And what we've talked about with campus, the budget executive committee is going to be working on contingency plans around should our reality be better than projections? What would be the things that would come back first? Would we reduce the reductions to units? Would we stop the salary reductions? All those different items. But that's something that the BEC is working through right now. Is that clear?
So what you're saying, it's unclear whether or not these will become permanent or not. It depends on how our revenue will rise
exactly.
Or not rise. Thank you.
If I could address, Klaus, one of the things that I think that we're learning as an organization is that if there are permanent reductions to your budget, you should make permanent reductions to your expenditures. If there are temporary reductions, then one could use one-time dollars. It is really poor budgeting practice to replace permanent reductions with one-time dollars. And so we're moving away from that. I would encourage every dean and every VP in every conversation I had that if there is a permanent reduction to your budget, you have to make permanent cuts.
Next slide. So a little on the capital budget. So the total capital budget that we submitted to the state is $52.4 million. Some of the projects that we're currently working on, this board approved the nursing classroom renovations of about $1.5 million. That's in progress. Renovations to our police department, about $1.4 million. That renovation is in project. And also the Commons project is underway. Also included is capital renewal pool of $10 million and underground infrastructure of about $1 million. And Brian and his staff are currently planning, working on planning those stages. Next slide. So Jason and I talked about this, and we thought it was important for the board to understand next steps that are that we'll need to move into. So first off, looking forward to fiscal year 21-22 and beyond, just so everyone is aware, we are fully live with the RAMP budget model July 1. And so we will be conducting training on the new budget software, Axiom, in early July. Axiom will allow us to not only manage the budget, but it will also allow for long-term forecasting and development, basically looking at short-term, mid-term, and long-term financial plans. Budget development will become a year-round process. There's not going to be the, Becca and I have already talked about, it's okay, I'll give her a few days off, but once we get back, we're going to start working on the 21-22 budget and reconvene the governance committees and start working on a year-round budget development process. Revenue targets will be established for our primary academic units during mid to late summer annually in partnership with enrollment and student experience, academic affairs, and strategy operations and finance. What I really want to do, I think this is important for the board. I know this year was a little different with the pandemic, but I really would like to complete our budget plan in late April of 21 and present this to the Board of Regents in budget workshops in May. Next slide. These steps are going to be critical to meeting our budget targets, those balancing strategies that I talked about. So my team is finalizing work on monthly monitoring tools. Specifically, these are reports around payroll spend, around procurement spend, budget versus actual by unit, and also extremely critical is a quarterly cash and financial position reporting so that we make sure that our cash is remaining in good position. And we'll also be developing other tools with an Axiom. We will present reports monthly to the president and scheduled required meetings with the deans and vice presidents if we are sensing that we are not meeting our budget targets. Contingency planning, as I talked about with the Budget Executive Committee, to develop contingency plans not only if we're doing better than what we had planned, but also what if we come back to campus in August and September and things are much worse than what we projected. We will, the Budget Executive Committee will be developing scenarios on how we manage through additional enrollment declines or even additional state appropriation declines.
Susan, on the monthly budget monitoring, it says the reports will be presented to the president monthly. Will the deans and have access to these reports
yes.
as well? Okay.
Yes. I would just, I guess what I mean by that, Jason, is I would present them to the president on a monthly basis to let him know where the units are standing, meeting their targets, and then we would also go out to the deans and vice presidents as well. Next slide. So that's it. Jason, I think I went over my allotted 10 minutes or 15 minutes a little bit, but I can now take any questions that any of the regents or anyone has around the budget as presented.
David, do you want to go with your question?
Absolutely. Thank you, Jason. Susan, I have just a quick question. I know you sort of addressed it in the allocation, the green scenario with the BEC. Let's imagine in a perfect world that the legislature fulfills a greater than 90% of the allotment that they have. We've anticipated a 10% reduction. Let's imagine it's a 5% or a 2.5% instead of that. Tuition comes in either slightly higher or much higher than the budgeted level. And in the current being FY21, in the next coming fiscal year, there is no reduction. Let me rephrase that. There is no additional fringe requirement on KERS, because I know that there's another $4 million or so set aside for that. So if these three things stack up, I'm assuming that all three of those prongs could be used to fulfill the shortfall, and would the priority, I would hope the BEC would be, the priority might be lost personnel, whether it be faculty or staff. Is that what you anticipate?
So yes, it goes back to what I was talking about with Klaus. Through this monitoring, that's when we would determine, if reality is better than what we projected and what we would, take off first, for the lack of a better term. And David, I think, I want to be clear to campus that, the president has said from the outset with this pandemic that we are committed to, sparing, job loss to the extent possible. I mean, I think it's critical. He has told me many times and others that he does not want folks to lose jobs and go out to a workforce or a job environment that's very, very difficult. So we are certainly committed to that.
Okay. I've heard that, and I appreciate that. The second part of my question, then, you triggered by that comment, is so there is no planned or anticipated or consultant-driven possibility of a second reduction in force during FY21?
No. That's what we remain committed to.
Okay. So just to be clear on the decentralized money, so when we talk about that 8.3-ish, you know, 8.1, 8.3, those are reduction targets that are done at a unit level. So the deans are responsible for those, department heads, people like that, right? That's within those individual units. So if a dean says, I can do all of this without reducing staff or faculty, they're allowed to do that, right? And if a department head says, we can meet our reduction target without reducing staff or faculty, they're allowed to do that, right?
Exactly. So I think it's critical, moving into a decentralized budget model, is while the BEC is developing guiding principles that will help the deans and vice presidents manage strategies, reduction strategies, it's really, in a decentralized budget model, it's the responsibility of the deans and vice presidents to manage to their budget targets, as the president was talking about earlier.
Okay. Thank you.
If I could address David's comment about what would we return first, I think we've been crystal clear that if our revenue projections are off and during the course of the fiscal year we have more revenue than we budgeted for or anticipated, the first return of dollars would be to the faculty staff shared sacrifice, that we want to return and restore those reductions to individual paychecks first. While I know the BEC is still working on its guiding principles, my expectation is the first guiding principle if we have more money than we thought, then restoring those faculty and staff salaries will be priority number one.
I appreciate that, sir, and Susan. And that's, I want to make sure everybody understands, I ask those questions knowing the answers. I just wanted to reiterate that publicly and for the record, because there still seems to be some community level confusion as to the priority, and I hope that clears it up. Thanks.
So just one other item, just so everyone knows, the campus knows as well. So the BEC meets again on Tuesday. So as I said, just taking a few days off, and then we'll get right back to that work of guiding principles and scenario planning. Jason, that's all I have, unless others have questions.
I'm going to go slow here to make sure everybody has a chance, but does anybody else have any further questions?
I want to make some comments to the budget.
Go ahead,
so the first thing is, I want to be clear, I understand many of the things in the budget, and I think it is overall about the best we can do, and I will support it, okay? But I sent to the board the statement from the faculty, which is from the AAUP and the Senate Executive Committee, which was unanimously approved, about the feeling of faculty towards how we are dealing with this crisis. And faculty overall is willing to do whatever it takes, so make the accommodations for these courses, but there's a lot of anxiety. And there are some faculty members where this anxiety is somewhat frustration turning into anger. And I think we have to be very much aware of this. And so I want to point out a couple of things in this budget which I do not like. And so a lot of faculty feel like that they will be bearing the brunt of these adjustments. Why? Well, because they have to use the summer to prepare for this teaching. They are asked to do things differently. Some of faculty will have additional courses to teach that they didn't have before because of we got rid of a lot of adjuncts, and so there are for some faculty an increase in teaching load. And the feeling is that academics bears the brunt. And so let me go a little further with this and connect things directly to the budget. So we have voted to have no tuition increase, and we have even voted to have a fee reduction. And so on the academic payments students have to make, that actually has been reduced. But at the same time, other units of campus do not follow that spirit. So our meal plan, I have calculated it out for the various meal plans, but on the average, they increased by 3%. I have looked at the housing revenue, and the housing revenue depends on what dormitory you talk about, but it goes up somewhere between 5 in the low case, and on the high case, about 10%. And that certainly is not in the spirit of making things affordable. As always, athletics is a sore point for many faculty members, and I understand that in the budget we have to put a number for ticket revenue, but it is clear that the ticket revenue which we have put down there for athletic events is exactly the same as we did last year. And I want to make the board and academic and the leadership of this institution aware of this, that should we move to athletic events with spectators, okay, then faculty is moving every class which has an enrollment above 50 to a remote environment. Faculty is moving to hybrid classes where the number of students in a class has been reduced to either a half or a third. And should we not follow up with this in terms of what we do for athletics, then this will generate a tremendous amount of anger among faculty, because they have been asked to do things, and if the rest of the units do not follow suit in supporting this, then why are we doing this? And if one thinks about this, then I think that the assumption that the ticket revenue will remain unchanged is completely unrealistic. And so I heard Susan clearly state that every division should remain within its budget, and if this happens, then that's fine. But I wanted you guys to be aware of that we need to manage this very carefully, and we need to be very much on board with what we're asking faculty to do and what happens on the academic side. That needs to be replicated on the non-academic side. So one other final comment on the budget is, we are operating with a very large amount of carry forward, and that still is not within the spirit of having the ramp model go live. And I understand that this will be a several-year process to reduce it. and also understand that it's somewhat unavoidable. But those are my comments on the budget. Thanks.
Okay. Does anybody else have any questions?
I would like to make a comment also in response to Klaus. You know, there has been a lot of work going on over many months with respect to how to navigate this pandemic and how we as an institution are going to move forward in a way that we can provide an appropriate and safe education for our students. We have been talking and including faculty opinions and voice in many, many of our discussions, all of our discussions, including budget, including restart committees. And I have to say that I do believe that this is a very difficult situation. And the balance in how we navigate this is especially important. So recognizing, and I do recognize how hard this is on faculty, I do know that they've been asked to fully participate in the sacrifices associated with our being able to open appropriately in the fall. If you'll remember, they put out a statement, the Senate put out a statement, I think it was Senate, that they wanted to participate in the shared sacrifices. The issue, though, to me, is while we're trying to provide an appropriate educational experience for students to return to campus, especially freshmen, especially students in vulnerable populations, we have to provide a balance of face-to-face, hybrid, and online courses. The worst thing that can happen to us is if we don't assure students that when they come, they're going to get the experience that they're expecting, that they're anticipating, and that we've said in the big red restart that we're going to provide, is that they won't come. And if they decide to take that gap year and they don't come, financially, it's going to be devastating for us. And the biggest problem is it's all unknown. So as we try and navigate this, we're trying to navigate it in a way that we are flexible and that we can respond to any concerns. And honestly, if people would just say, these are our concerns, we will respond and try and work it out so that it's fair for faculty, it's fair for staff, and it's what students need and what faculty need. But I think this has to be a conversation that involves all parties. And it's feeling like it's becoming a little adversarial. And I guess I would appreciate it if we could have a conversation and work through these issues rather than the way it seems to be progressing. That's all I have to say.
If I could jump in here on a couple of those points that Klaus made. First of all, with respect to the ticket revenue and unknowns there, of course there's unknowns. There's unknowns in every area on campus. But what I would say is we have extensive planning that we've put into place to deal with that. And specifically, one of the options that our season ticket holders have, and first of all, we're optimistic that we're going to be able to have fans in the stands, but one of the options that they have is that they can still pay the amount that they would pay for tickets and it can be converted into a donation. Now, I don't expect everybody to do that, but I would expect some to do that. So there will be the ability to bring in revenue from ticket purchases beyond the number of people that may be in the stadium. We also have had extensive conversations with the Hilltopper Athletic Foundation and they are going to work with us and help us on any potential revenue shortfalls we may have, again, with respect to tickets. In terms of concern about social distancing, comparing a classroom to a football stadium, I think it's a little unfair because I think, as everybody clearly knows, it's much easier to social distance in a football stadium than it is in a classroom. So whatever the protocols are by the governor is what we will follow, and there will be extensive protocols for football stadiums, much as there are for the Kentucky Derby. There will be over 50,000 people at the Kentucky Derby, but they will be social distancing and following the governor's guidelines, and we will do the same in football. We won't put anybody in any risk at our football stadiums in any way that's not consistent with what's being done throughout the state.
I appreciate both of your comments, Todd and Cheryl. I hope that this will be, that we will be able to settle all these issues collaboratively. And again, what I was expressing was the feeling of faculty, and I believe that most faculty do not want to have this adversarial. Okay, these are just concerns, and I wanted you to be aware of these concerns. That's my point.
If I may respond to the comment about housing and dining rates, I do want to bring to the board's attention that the dining rates are contractually set through our contract with Aramark, and then the housing rates remain competitive in the state. Our increase in the housing, though slight, is to help offset the first-year village construction, and it remains competitive and lower than most housing rates within the state.
Does anybody else have any questions or anything they would like to say about the budget? Okay. If there's no further discussion, I'll entertain a motion for FB1 approval of the 2020-21 operating budget as presented.
So moved.
George, we have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second. Second.
Second by David. All right. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. The next item on the agenda is, which Susan also mentioned in her presentation, is FB2, approval of the personnel actions for the tiered salary reduction. Does anybody have any questions or comments on this motion? All right, hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve FB2.
Approved.
George has made the motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Is that Dr. Bale?
Yes.
All right. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, like sign? All right, the motion carries. And then that's all I have for the finance and budget for the special call meeting.
Thank you, Chair McKinney. We much appreciate the Finance Committee and the work it's done over the last few months. Susan and your team, thank you. These are challenging times, but I know we all feel as Regents that we're in good hands. So thank you very much. The next item on our special meeting today is a report from the Nomination Committee. Regent Nichols chaired that committee, so I will ask him to give his report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the committee met, and given the unique circumstances that we are facing as a university, we concluded that it was important for a consistency in leadership, and that we, our recommendation of the committee is to retain the current slate of officers and committee chairs going forward.
Thank you. Are there any nominations or comments from the floor? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Regent Harris moved.
Second.
Second.
I had a second from Regent Porter and a close dueling second from someone else that I didn't catch.
That was me.
Okay. Thanks, Linda. So we have a motion and we have a second. Any further discussion? Julia, you want to call the roll?
Oh, you may call individual on this one?
Okay. Yeah.
Regent Bell?
Yes, I'm for it.
Regent Ball?
Yes.
Secretary Brinkley?
Aye.
Regent Ernst?
Yes.
Regent Harris?
Yes.
Chair Higdon?
Yes.
Regent Henson?
Yes.
Vice Chair McKinney?
Yes.
Regent Nichols?
Yes.
And Regent Porter?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, we have a unanimous approval.
Thank you. Thank you, George, once again for chairing our nomination committee and the work that you and your people, your members did. Any other comments? This concludes our agenda items, but if there's any other comments.
I just wanted to speak real quick before we go into the next meeting, but I just wanted to really commend the faculty and staff that have taken these voluntary budget reductions. From a student's perspective, and especially from my perspective, that really shows how much that you all care for our students. And so I just wanted to say thank you on behalf of the student body for that sacrifice that you all are making to help each and every single student here at this institution, and to make sure that all of us are still going to get to enjoy that next year of class that I'm so looking forward to in August. And I just, like I said, thank you all again from the bottom of my heart for your sacrifice and for everything that you're doing for this institution and for our WKU family.
Mr. Chair, we have someone who is going to be participating in his final Board of Regents member, at least as part of our leadership team. Brian Kuster is with us today, and Brian has been with the university for 35 years, beginning his career in 1985 as one of our residence hall directors. He's been acting director of residence life, coordinator of residential judicial affairs, assistant director of residence life, director of housing and residence life in 1998, and executive director of the WKU Student Life Foundation. Brian has invested his life in this university, and I'm so thankful that he agreed to stay on and serve for a couple more years with me as we pursued the first year village strategy. Every day, Brian shows up and treats our 20,000 students as his own kids. And his passion, his enthusiasm has been great for this university. I know he is escaping the winters of the Midwest or Upper South to the more temperate winters of Florida, but he assures us that he will participate in the FIU and FAU football games and any other travel we make down to the state. So, Brian, thank you for your career, thank you for loving WKU, and thank you for your friendship and good counsel.
I appreciate all the opportunities that I have been given over the years, and as everyone knows, it's never something that I've done. It's always things that we've done as a team, and been very fortunate to work with great people over the last 35 years. And again, I appreciate all the opportunities, Dr. Cabona, that you've given me, and Dr. Ransdale before you, and the other people that before the end. So thank you so much.
Congratulations, Brian. Good luck. Best wishes. Anyone else have a comment? We've taken care of our special meeting agenda. Want to announce our retreat dates of August 6 and 7. again extend an invitation to each of the regents to suggest, recommend any topics or discussions that you would like to cover on those days. And we'll start formalizing, hopefully, an engaging and meaningful retreat for August 6 and 7. Our next committee meetings are on October 23rd. Fourth quarterly meeting is December 11th. That covers our agenda. I would accept a motion that we adjourn the special called meeting.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Regent Bell, seconded by Regent Harris. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. The special meeting is now concluded.